There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question, kiss my...
All right, here we go. Hour number two of Midday Mobile and the phone number, text line 343-0106. State Senator Chris Elliott's going to join us in just a second. Lots more to talk about on what's being done to help alleviate this $2.1 billion project, at least the cost being on you, the citizens of Mobile and Baldwin County, traveling back and forth. We'll take a couple more calls, though, quickly before we get to Senator Elliott. Sharon is in Mobile and up next. Hey, Sharon.
Good morning or afternoon.
Whatever it is, I'll answer to both. That's good. Yeah,
the main problem, as I see it, is we don't have the money for this. The money is too much. And Karen, the previous caller, although a tunnel is a tube, I think, and it can't be widened, right. I think she has the right idea. The project needs to be scaled down. And if raising the height of the bayway is an unfunded federal mandate, then if the feds cannot fund it, then keep it the same height. And you said that part is $1 billion.
Yep.
Okay, $1 billion is a greater amount than what they have said it would take to rebuild all the prisons in Alabama. All of that prison expense that we don't have the money for is less than $1 billion. $1 billion is $1,000 million. That is an astronomical amount of money, plus the other billion on top of it.
Or
the billion and a half on top of that.
It's double. Way more.
This is ridiculous. The scope of the bridge has to be reduced. See that is the only solution. And if the federal government will not provide the money for what they are mandating, then refuse to do it.
Are we kinfolk, Sharon? Or do we talk about like this? Yeah, this, it's the question I have. This is what I wonder about: is are we given the option? Are we given the bronze or silver option? Are we told that okay, here's the gold option? Right, you got to do the health insurance for the office. You got the bronze, the silver, and the gold. The gold looks all really good, but you can't afford the premium, so you do the bronze or you do the silver. And I don't think we're being in a right way offered what the silver plan could be, what the bronze plan would look like.
That's a good point. Here's another problem that I don't know if people have thought about. I took a tour with a group of the Bankhead Tunnel several years ago, and at that time we were told it had already outlived its projected lifespan, mm-hmm. but it had been taken good care of, so it was still in use. What is going to prevent the Department of Transportation in a few years, who knows how long, from saying, well, we're going to restrict the Bankhead Tunnel now to pedestrian and bicycles, and it's too expensive to keep maintaining this when we have this other big tunnel now to maintain.
Sharon, you're not I'll say this, for birds chirping in my ears over the years, you're not too far off the mark. I'll say that. We'll just leave it at that because I can't prove anything there. But you're right on that. Oh, speaking of which, of touring the tunnel, Dalton saw the pictures this morning. If they would have only known on Friday, I couldn't go do it because I was doing my live show from the rodeo site. But if they only knew that my son was one of the Cub Scouts that was walking around inside the Wallace Tunnel in the little background rooms and all the stuff that you don't see riding through the tunnel? Would they have let him go through the tunnel and look through that? I don't know. But he and the Cub Scouts got through there, and they got out, and so life's good. I got the pictures to prove it. Larry, Mobile, next. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. I am that air conditioning company that you were talking about earlier. We got six trucks that would end up paying the $90 a month minimum to put them back and forth across the bay. You're talking over $7,000 a year.
And you're not going to eat that, Larry, right? Or you may eat of it.
No, we're just going to roll it right over to the customer. I mean, that's $70,000 in 10 years. Now, we're not going to eat that.
I mean, that's what businesses do. When, you know, at a national level, when Democrats say, oh, well, you tax them, tax those businesses, you're taxing the people. I mean, the business, you know.
So not only are you going to be paying $6, but every company that goes
wait a second, I'm paying,
gonna jack their price up.
I'm going to pay for your tolls?
Yep.
Oh, man. I hope that window unit still runs in my house.
Exactly.
Larry, appreciate the call. Let me grab Joey real quick, and then we get to State Senator Chris Elliott. Joey, in Mobile, up next.
Hey, me and my wife had a great time fishing the rodeo, but
how'd you
nobody
do?
Can afford that toll that they're talking about going across the bay multiple times a day. The other thing, I don't know if it's been addressed, you're going to create some more choke points. How's people going east on I-10 get to Water Street downtown to the Port of Mobile, which the Port of Mobile is what drives the city, and all the commerce going in and out the port? You're going to create some more choke points.
Think about the choke point when people
get to Water Street when all of us work downtown.
But Joey, think about the choke point that's going to happen the second people realize they're about to get to the tolling zone there around Virginia Street, and they all start getting off on Virginia, or they get off at South Broad and come down the surface street to get on government to hang that right turn to go to the tunnel. Think about what that's going to look like.
Exactly, it's going to be worse than what we got.
Yep, I mean that's there we are. We got to figure something out, Joey. Appreciate your call. Let's go to the man that has all the answers for us. He's now going to throw something at the telephone. State Senator Chris Elliott. Hey.
Thanks for having me yet again on this. You know, Bill Britt said we're surprised by all this. I don't think I'm surprised. Are you surprised?
Nope. And you're on my short list, and that's the things I told Bill Britt. I said, here was my problem, is that y'all were talking about this subject like you were, in a way, like a TV station out of Jacksonville would report on it. No one just even erroneous new information. I mean, when those of us around here, and you're absolutely on the list, have been on this story and been talking about this with us for over... this is something we were doing in 2018. I know I've been doing it since probably 2014 or earlier. I mean, you and I were talking about it from a county commission level.
Absolutely right. I mean, I've been intimately involved in this project for the last 5 years or so, and we've been talking about it on your show. I wonder how many hours we've spent talking about project.
A lot. And then here, I guess, and that was my immediate frustration, is to hear, it really even wasn't Bill Britt, but it was Charlie Walker. Charlie, on the show, the lady on the far right of the panel, if you're looking at the screen, probably on the far left, but if you're looking on the far right of the screen, she was just not only had a different opinion than me, but her facts were incorrect, and that's what got me to make the call to Bill Britt today.
Yeah, it was pretty telling about 30 seconds into that show that they didn't know about Baldwin County or Mobile. They couldn't tell the difference between Orange Beach and Gulf Shores and a bridge across the canal and a bridge across the bay and how those are used differently and by different people. It was not their finest moment, that's for sure.
And I think that's just the, I'm just trying to make sure people can have, Lord knows, I like it. People can have different opinions as long as people are operating from the same set of facts. So let's talk about facts. This is something you have worked on. You were talking about it at the county commission level, obviously as a state senator, more intimately involved in what happens coming out of Montgomery on this. And to the point that you've now circled back, I know SB3 and SB4 out there. I want to talk about those. And this goes back to the question of, are we going to have a project in the first place? And if we do, at what level of the project? You said, hey, do we need this, you know, full-bore gold plan version of this project? I mean, what do they say in Montgomery to that? Do they have a, okay, here's a choice B, C, or D?
Well, they haven't presented that yet, and I think what ALDOT wants to do is push forward with this project. And that's what's really gotten me to take a step back, and I would encourage the State Toll Authority and the governor's office to take a step back as well. Your previous caller, I think it was Shannon. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, or Sharon. Sharon.
Sharon, excuse me. She needs to go to work for ALDOT. I think we need to put her on payroll because she's making a lot of sense. Look, there's just certain things we can't afford. And when you get down to it, the devil's in the details. We've been talking about this for 5 years. But, Sean, we've just started talking about what the tolls were actually going to be and what the cost was actually going to be. And that's when, the chickens come home and we look at it and say, whoa, this isn't going to work. It's
right.
Entirely too much money. It's time to take a step back and figure out what's driving this cost. What design parameters are driving this cost? And do we need to have it or not? But I think at this point, I'd rather have no bridge than a bridge that costs this much and is funded by a $6 toll.
And I think that's where a lot of people are. You are, I will say this, I'll get you back on the record. If there's a reasonable toll or no toll, are you for the bridge?
The project is a good project.
Okay.
The bridge is needed.
Okay.
There's no question about it. But it cannot come at the cost, this astronomical cost, to my constituents and to Mobile and Baldwin commuters both. It's too much. There's all kinds of things I want that I can't afford, Sean, and the state's no different.
I want to talk about this, too, because Steve has texted on this, and other people have. I said, okay, did you sponsor the bill allowing for the concessionaire on the bridge project? And if so, why?
Great question. I appreciate you bringing it up. The legislation that authorized that was passed in 2008, okay? So more than 10 years ago. It had its first meeting back in 2008 under the Riley administration. It's been around for a long time. So the legislation that I passed, Senate Bill 154, absolutely did not create this ability. What it did do was change some of the statute to allow for certain tax breaks so that the project cost would go down. The estimates are that Senate Bill 154, my bill, would reduce the cost of this project if it moved forward between $100 and $200 million. So it's important that folks look at the origin of the legislation and not the most recent amendment to it. But that bill's been around for a long, long time.
And that's good that you get that out, because I know people talked about that and said, oh, well, he sponsored it. And I said, well, nuance is important, and there's something in the gray. And basically, I'm going to say something, then you correct me if you disagree, that in your position, State Senator, you're looking at this. This is already the law in the state. You're trying to amend it that if they do go through with what you told us you don't want to have happen, at least you're trying to exact some change of that. Is that fair?
That's exactly right. I could not have put it more succinctly. I want to make sure that if they're not hearing the outrage down here, that we've got a backup plan. The backup plan is reduce the cost of the project in any way we can. That's what Senate Bill 154 did. And then my Senate Bill 3 and Senate Bill 4 that you were talking about a minute mm-hmm. ago will provide an effective rate of no tolls for locals. And I think that's a good backup plan to have as well.
Yeah, okay, you say effective because two things. You talked about something that you did talk about, Go Mesa money, back when from a county commission level. I remember you bringing that up. We talked about Go Mesa money.
That's right. And, of course, that was when we were talking about an $800 million bridge.
Remember that? Remember those days, man? Remember back when we were talking about that?
The good old days when we were only talking about $800 million. And that's the challenge with using the Go Mesa money. And, of course, Congressman Burns put out there that he thinks Go Mesa money needs to be used. I understand. Director Cooper said you're going to have trouble bonding the Go Mesa money. He's not wrong either. And that's where you stop and you say, okay, it's time to think about this critically. It's time to figure out how can, instead of saying no, how do we figure out a way to get this to really make meaningful change instead of saying can't all the time? And that's what Senate Bill 4 does. Senate Bill 4 provides a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for anybody that goes across that bridge and spends a toll or has to pay a toll. That means they can get that money back from the state at the end of the year. That means that they can either take it off their taxes directly dollar for dollar, or if the amount you spend on your toll exceeds your tax liability, you get that money back in cash at the end of the year.
Wait, it uses the
Go Mesa funding in order to do that.
Wait. Not only do you can eliminate your tax liability if it's enough, if it's more, where will the check come from?
It will come from the state of Alabama under the bill.
I'm down, but how are you going to get them to agree to that? I mean, the rest of that cabal in Montgomery, how are you going to get them to agree to that?
Well, here's the good answer is it's not hurting them, right? We're using GoMesa money to do it. And we'll use it on an annual basis as opposed to trying to put that money up front on the project, which is what, you know, Director Cooper was saying, you're going to have a hard time bonding that money, and you've got interest expense associated with that. So my argument to my fellow legislators, many of whom I've obviously already talked to, is, guys, that's our money.
Mm-hmm.
That's our money.
Yep.
And what we want to do is we want to spend it to effectively reduce the toll to zero on locals. And again, trying to get around that local provision or the prevention that the FHWA has, where they say you can't treat people from Alabama differently than you treat folks from Florida and Mississippi and Louisiana. You can talk about frequent user, but you can't talk about where they live.
Can you say that again? Because I mean, even though we talked about it a few times, people have not caught this. Once again, the reason why you can't say people in these counties don't pay a toll is what?
That's the Federal Highway Administration saying you can't treat people from different states differently. It has to do with the interstate commerce part of the interstate itself. So they say you can do a frequent user discount, but you can't treat folks differently based on where they live. My answer to that is fine, but you don't get to govern the Alabama tax code. We do. So I'm going to work around that, and I'm going to say if you file an Alabama tax return, then you're going to be able to claim a credit, dollar-for-dollar credit, for every toll dollar you spend.
Now, this is we have to talk about this a whole bunch for people. I get it, what you're talking about now, for people to understand it. It's a way, like you said, to effectively make the toll impact zero on people in Mobile and Baldwin County while still complying with whatever carve-out it is for FHWA.
Absolutely. I mean, the folks in Mobile and Baldwin County, Coastal Alabama, we have paid enough. We have paid enough. Our economy generates a disproportionate amount of total state revenue. Our gas tax is higher than it is in anywhere else. We have paid enough. And we need to make sure that our folks down here are not burdened with any more tax, which is essentially what this toll is, than they already have been. And that's exactly what Senate Bill 4 will do.
Okay, so are these pre-filed, right? So people can see them, or?
They are pre-filed. They are probably not up on the web. Interestingly enough, the lieutenant governor assigns them to committee. They have to be assigned to committee prior to being published on the web. So I think he's either out of town or tied up doing official lieutenant governor stuff. So he has not assigned them to a committee yet, but they will be on the state's website, on Allison, the Alabama Legislative Information Services website, so you can go and read through them.
So once again, to the quick cliff notes, or bring it to today, Wikipedia entry on this is SB 3 and 4, between one being about GoMesa, one being about the deduction of tolls, would work those two bills together to make the net impact of the toll zero on people from Mobile and Baldwin counties.
That's correct. And again, that's not my preferred stance. My preferred stance on this is take a step back, reevaluate the project, figure out how to proceed within our means. Failing that, if the governor and the transportation director decide to move forward with this project against, you know, what we're asking them to do down here, I want to make sure we've got a backup plan to protect us, and that's exactly what this does.
All right, very good. State Senator Chris Elliott, thanks for your time on this. I'll just add this to the other, I don't know, I think we're probably at like 50, 55 hours we've talked about this on the show, so I appreciate you adding to the hour count.
Absolutely, and we'll continue to do it. It's a complicated project. It's going to impact this region for 50 years if we can't get them to stop and hold up on it, and we need to make sure we do everything we can to protect ourselves.
Good deal. Check back soon.
Thanks, sir.
All right, 125 FM Talk 106.5. We'll come back and grab some calls. And coming up here after the top of the, or bottom of the hour news, whatever I call that thing, the one that happens at 31 minutes after the hour, my buddy James Patterson, consumer law attorney, comes in to talk Equifax, and they're slapping leather. We'll pay some money. All right.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 129 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. Coming back after the break, talk about Equifax now agreeing to slap weather, spend up to, they said, $425 million to help people affected by the data breach. Had you forgotten about that? Tisk, tisk. If you're affected by the Equifax breach, you can't file claims just yet. That's coming, but we'll talk about the details of that with the man who has walked us through this whole process from what had happened to doing the kind of the backstory on it, and then what was happening, not happening in Congress with it. James Patterson, consumer law attorney, joins us here after the break. We'll talk more about that. Get the news from Westwood One. Dr. Bill's forecast on the way, and then we're back right here on Midday Mobile. Text line open for you, 343-0106. 343-0106. Oh, by the way, too, side note, I've refreshed this a couple times. Looked at it. Let's see. Still not there. Change.org petition calling for the immediate resignation or firing of ALDOT Director John Cooper. They have 2,180 out of 2,500 requested signatures on there. I wonder what that's going to cause.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Good to have you along. Good to see my buddy James Patterson again, although it's always, I need to get you in to talk about fun stuff at some point. It's always like bad news stuff here.
Oh, that's fine. I don't mind talking about this kind of stuff. This is what I do for a living.
That's what I'm about to say. This is what you do every day as a consumer law attorney. And you were kind enough to start talking with us way back when we first, we the people first found out about the Equifax breach.
That's
that,
right.
That yes. Made me lose my mind because they, I think it, if I remember, it was like in September of that year we found out about it, and they had, Equifax had known since June or July.
Yeah, they had known for several months, and then the number of people exposed got bigger and bigger as the story got bigger. So, and I think the final was about 154 million-ish people. I mean, I don't think they ever gave us an exact number. How many people were exposed?
So 154 million. Let's just stick with that for sure. 154 sure. million. There are 330 million Americans or something.
Yeah, like that. And some of those are kids.
Yeah.
So they don't have credit reports yet. So
it's pretty much all of us.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah exactly.
So this happened, and if we let's go back because I want to set the stage. The way I understand it, all off the top of my head here, but that happened because they didn't like update their Norton antivirus or something.
Pretty much, there was a breach in their software system, and they had not for I think 6 months to a year, something like that. They were getting emails from the manufacturer of all this stuff saying, "Hey, you need to update." And their IT department was just taking a nap or something.
And so that didn't get done, and that's how the breach happened.
That's right. The breach happened. A hole in the somewhere on the online website where you actually, where us consumers could go and do disputes. Mm-hmm. That's how the guys got in and started just slowly pulling data out for months. It wasn't like 2 days or 3 days or a week. It was for months.
They knew about it. Equifax had been knowing about it. They're aware of it, they're getting our credit, and then they finally get to a point they tell us months later.
Yes, finally okay. The pressure gets to them and they say, oh, by the way, something happened.
I mean, that's why I want to lay it out, because I mean, this informs the consumer of this news to the nature of the negligence, in my opinion.
Yes, it does. I mean, it was huge.
Because sometimes people get all over companies that get breached. And I go, you know, wait a second. If the company was doing everything that's standard, right, to keep from having a breach, and some Russian hacking firm has figured out something that nobody has ever figured out before, and they get in there, I cut the company some slack because they didn't know to expect it. But in this case, they don't update their Norton or whatever it is, and then they know about it for months and don't tell we the people. To me, that's the negligence on this one. That's the one that makes it so egregious.
Well, right, and Equifax is in the business of protecting data, getting our data together. This isn't like Target getting breached. This is Equifax.
Right.
It has all our stuff. So you think they would be on the cutting edge every day making sure their stuff is good.
When you say they got our stuff, I'm just bringing the story back up because people might have forgotten. When you say, what kind of information they get?
It was, again, it was your social. Mm-hmm. It was your address. It was your name. Some accounts got hacked with actual credit card number accounts, so they could have figured that out. So just those
all your
three,
stuff. It's not like it was just a social floating around. It was attached to your name, your address.
That's right.
The whole nine yards.
Yeah. So anything that could be used, all those three pieces of data could be used to open up accounts. And in some instances, it was some driver license here. So there was a little bit of data breach, but not everybody got breached on that. So that's the information that got out.
All right, so that happens. Now today I hear the settlement has been filed.
Yes, and the FTC and Equifax have been working on this for a while. The funny thing is, and the number, I've seen 600 million, I've seen 650, I've seen 700 million.
Right, it started this morning. I saw 700.
Yes.
Now I see an update here, consumer at consumer.ftc.gov. There's talk about $425 million to help people affected by the data breach. Is that on top of the $700
million? No, that's not on top. So the $425 is part of that $700.
I mean, how much is compensatory and how much is punitive? I know it's not the same because it's not a judgment.
Right, it's not. So to break it down, I think it's about $150 or $200 million is the fines that Equifax
has. Okay, so that's the punitive. If we were in a...
Yeah, they're going to write a check to the U.S. government and say, here you go, here's... for the punitive side of this. Here's where we screwed up. Mm-hmm. So the $450 is left over is going to be going back to the consumers, to us. And so there's different ways that's going to break down.
Let me do the math here. There's $154 million. Okay, sir.
Well, and it's not even that. It's not even, we're not even going to get a check in the mail. So I'll tell you how it's going to work. So, okay. For example, if you, Sean Sullivan, uh-huh. had to hire a lawyer to clean up some fraud that was related to this Equifax mm-hmm. breach, and you hired me, and I did
that's
some work
correct.
For you, and we got it fixed, and I charged you $5,000.
Right.
Well, right now, once this gets approved, you can go to the FTC settlement website. It's going to be, click a couple buttons, you'll be able to fill a form and say, hey, here's my damages related to this action mm-hmm. based on Equifax. Here's my bills. Here's what I'm wanting. And you could get up to $20,000 reimbursed back for your legal fees and what it cost you.
Okay.
So, but that's it. That's your max. So far.
You better not be over 20 then.
Exactly. So that's one way you can get reimbursed as a consumer. If you have actual damages, kind of like the BP claim stuff. Remember all that stuff that mm-hmm, went on for
sure.
years? It's going to be a paperwork nightmare, I'm sure, for people that actually have been affected by this. They're going to have to send in their bills, send in fairly. I think the term
Will they have to hire the attorney again to be able to file?
Most likely. So the term I saw online this morning in the articles was fairly traceable. So if your damages.
Oh, I love stuff that's not concrete. Fairly traceable?
I'm sure that's a great legal term. Yeah, fairly traceable. So if you can relate.
What's the definition of that?
I'm not exactly sure. I'm going to have to use that in court one day.
Fairly traceable.
Fairly. It's a very gray area, isn't it?
I don't like that.
So that's part of that process is you'll have to submit and get up to $20,000 if you've been affected. So these are going to be for the people that actually did suffer some kind of damage mm-hmm. after the breach. Other parts of that settlement are going to go to free credit monitoring. People that were affected will get up to like 10 years of free credit monitoring. So you'll... whatever Equifax charges for that service a year, I can't remember if it's $100 or
y'all remember this, that after the breach, when they offered credit monitoring services and they were charging
yes,
people for it.
That was great.
The moxie.
that came back to bite them real quick. But there's a couple other things in there in part of that settlement. Besides the credit, 10 years of credit monitoring, six free credit reports a year starting in 2020.
Okay, because right now you get one on your birthday.
You get one, right.
Well, I say your birthday. That's what I do. Yeah, but you do it whatever day.
That's right. That's a free credit report everybody's entitled to get. So on top of that free one, you're going to get an extra six just through Equifax. Remember, it's not including Experian.
So you and TransUnion, are they not?
They're not part of this at all because they didn't get breached.
They didn't get breached, but you'd think that they would do something to show that they've doubled down on that. Are they coming out with some PR campaign? It wasn't us.
They have been updating their websites, they've been doing apps, and they've been coming along, I guess, along with Equifax. So, hey, we're doing some good things too. You can pay for some stuff, or we don't charge that much for these things, and we can protect you just as well based on this. We don't want this to happen to you. So they've been doing a few things.
All right, let's do this. You hold on over the break?
Sure.
Okay, we're on the break here, coming right back. If you've got specific questions here on this, the man who can answer them is sitting right here with me. He's been talking about it with us since, the day this story broke, I think, or not too many days after, James Patterson, at Alabama Consumer Law.
Yes.
All right, very good. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Good to have my buddy James Patterson in Alabama Consumer Law. And we've talked about We got to get you back in to talk about student loan debt, too, because I feel that bubbling back up, man. There we go.
I have clients all the time come in, and that's one thing, because the bankruptcy code doesn't cover that, and it's a big thing that I'd like to get more involved into.
Because I've talked about that bubble bursting at some point.
It's coming.
Yep.
I agree with you.
We've been saying that for a couple of years. You think it's in the next five?
Oh, I believe so. Okay. Definitely.
All right, and at that, well, you know what we'll do? Because like we do things around here, we'll talk about it before it happens instead of just looking in the rear view.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Right now we're talking about Equifax now, and they settle for some number. When you start, is it $700 million? You know, to a guy like me, a million here and there adds up. That's sure. Real money. But yeah. It's $700 million-ish.
And like I told you, Equifax had put this away. A year and a half ago, they already knew they were going to pay something, which is very interesting that the number comes out exactly what they put up a year or so ago.
Wait. The amount that Equifax squirreled away, that they took out of one quarter, two quarters, three quarters, whatever, they put it over there, and they went and they got the Christmas Club account.
That's right. And then they've had it sitting there waiting to pay the FTC and the government once they worked out a deal. And that's exactly about the amount that's come up, which is the $700 million.
Okay, so there's two parts of this. I mean, there's the punitive part that would hopefully have Equifax correct and throw enough of a chill at TransUnion, you know, and
Experian, right. It's the deterrence effect is what it's supposed to be, right. But a $200 million fine against these businesses that make...
What's the value of a business like this?
It's in the billions. I mean, because of all the data they own and they collect and they sell back to the, you know, Discover card and credit cards.
I wonder what the percentage, $700 billion is, what percentage of earnings in a given year for that company?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's $700 million, it's probably extremely low, like in the single digits percentage.
All right, so, just want to point these things.
Yeah, they make plenty of money.
The other part of this then is what you're getting into, and I want to double back on this. What it means for all of us, right? What does it mean for all of us that had our data breached? You said 10-year window, so because this stuff sits out there. We talked about this too. Bad dudes and bad gals out there can like shelf this information, and they may not use it right now.
They
go, hey, you know what? Let's get that shelf full of numbers and IDs and try something today.
Exactly, because all of us, I mean, you and I at our ages, we're still going to be using our credit for the next 20, 30, 40 years. I mean, it's still going to be there. And our social is not changing. Our names aren't changing. Our address may change, but our social and name are still there. So what happens is, yeah, this data is out there in the dark web. That's a phrase I know we've used on the show several times. And part of this settlement... The next 6 months after the settlement is signed in and agreed to by the court, then you have up to 6 months to make a claim for what happened to you.
But what if it hadn't happened yet?
Well, that's a good point. And so what else I read is then there's an extra 4 years if somehow something happens now going forward, you have a 4-year window. But what happens if it doesn't happen within the 4-year window?
So what I need is the criminals out there to go ahead and make their move on my credit now.
And there's probably going to be some more detail that comes out about that. This was just a general...
And once somebody does it... Unless you added like a pin in or something like that. Once they do it, doesn't mean some other group can't try it.
Oh, that's
later.
Right. I've had clients over the years when we've done this with identity theft, you've had someone have stuff come on their credit. We dispute it, get rid of it, it goes away, fix it, and then you'll have other stuff pop up because somebody else has got the data. So it does happen. It doesn't just end.
So Equifax is saying, well, you got the 6-month window and then you got a 4-year window. Well, what happens if it, in 4 years and one day, the next group gets hold of it and makes a run at it?
That's a good question. And I don't know what the language is going to say in that order.
It should be, if you can honestly link it back to the failure that happened at Equifax, it should be in perpetuity.
I would think so as well. And there may be some changes to it. Remember, a judge has got to sign off on this settlement. Mm-hmm. So this is just a proposal. We don't really know the details of the settlement yet, other than just some general things that have come out today.
But the proposal, I mean, the settlement amount is exactly what Equifax put back.
Around that number, yes.
Okay. Detect my cynicism. David asked on the text line, can't you freeze your credit to reduce your future risk?
Yes, everybody has that ability to do that now. And actually, that's a free service right now by all three bureaus. And that came out right after this breach. You used to have to pay for it. Sometimes you didn't, sometimes you did. It was really weird how the bureaus would say sometimes you could, sometimes you couldn't, or you wouldn't need to pay for it. But now you can freeze it at any point and unfreeze it.
Explain to somebody who has not followed that.
So you would go to the website, let's say Equifax.com. You would go there, log in, create your account, and then you can go in there and it actually says, would you like to freeze your account? And you can actually go ahead and freeze it and just click click a button.
Okay, what happens when I get it? Listen, honey, if you're listening, I'm not serious, but when I want to go buy that new 32-foot Sport Fisher.
Well, what would happen is there's a phone number and some information you put in that account. So when a creditor gets your information, they have to actually call you and get some verification before they can unfreeze.
Why didn't bad guy do that?
Why doesn't the bad guy do
that? Bad guy goes in there and freezes your account unfreezes it when they...
That's a great question. So they could, yeah, they could make up an Equifax login and go in and change the phone number to their phone number and do that as well. I guess it would be difficult because you'd have to have separate phone numbers. I think something would pop up saying, hey, we already have a number on
changed
this
account. It to this number, number here in
North Korea,
somewhere in Yongping or something like that. That's I moved.
I've frozen mine a couple of times, just kind of messing around with the system.
I'm glad you have, because as an attorney doing this, you should be able to firsthand be able to tell people what that's like.
That's right. I do that a lot, and I always tell people make sure everybody goes on to their Equifax, TransUnion, Experian, and just log in. You don't have to buy any of the services. They provide some free stuff on there, but it does give you some monitoring, some basic monitoring. Like, you'll get an email that says, hey, someone checked your credit 3 weeks ago. Well, you don't really know who. You have to go in and get a little more further information when you go online. But they've done a lot better job in the last 2 years of giving us consumers information I think we already should have had long ago for free, but it's
basic information. For me, it's great to be pinged when something happens, but also being able to go in and look at, I mean, this is just the easiest way to figure it out. You go in and there's an account there that you're like, dude, that's
right. That's the best way to do it. Go in and just see an account that you don't recognize, and you send a dispute to the credit bureaus. And I always tell folks, don't do it online. Send it by mail, certified mail. Make sure the bureaus get that. I know. People don't know about mail anymore.
Okay, explain how this works. So mail, this would not be, I don't hit send. I actually...
Because in the past, the way the system has worked really limited you on what you could send in. So if you had a dispute, hey, this isn't mine, and you wanted to send in some detail, they would limit your characters you could put into the system.
Of course they did.
Yeah, of course, yeah. So now...
Like Twitter.
And you would get some response back, and you wouldn't know exactly when they got the response and what they were doing. So we always encourage our clients.
Send it certified.
Certified mail, you'll get the green card back, and then a physical letter that we can use and show up in court if we ever have to sue the bureaus for not fixing something on your account.
Okay, quick primer on that. If somebody is going to send something into dispute, you say, this is not me, you write the letter out, I guess, a couple paragraphs here of narrative or short, just a couple sentences.
Yeah, the more information, the better. Exactly.
And then do you attach stuff?
Yes.
How can I attach to prove a negative? Like, what do I...
Well, what we tell clients is if it's an account that's not yours, then you would send in a copy of your birth certificate, not birth certificate, but social security card, copy of a driver's license, these things, and give a detailed response on why this isn't yours, and send that in, and then wait for some kind of follow-up. So you're right. If there's an account on there you don't know about, and it's popped up there.
It's tough for me to prove that, and say, that's not me.
Exactly.
Here's some documentation to prove it's not me. Wait, I don't,
And what we also have to do is the client print out a copy of the credit report and then highlight the account on there and send that as well, showing that, hey, this isn't mine, and put in a yellow highlighter or circling it. So the people have that, the investigators have it when they get it.
All right. As always, I appreciate you being part of the show, giving us that information. We are going to talk student loan bubble here soon.
Happy to talk about it.
People want to reach out to you online, where do they go?
Oh, they can go to allalaw.com, allaw.com, and that's our website, and you can shoot us email and let us know.
And on Twitter?
And Twitter, it's allaconsumerlaw.com.
All right.
Allaconsumerlaw.
There you go. James Patterson, that guy. All right there, and talking Equifax. And we will be back tomorrow morning, bright and early, for Mobile Mornings. Join us then. And I've got some things shaping up. More of this toll discussion and the nuance that's lost on Montgomery TV shows. We'll talk about that on tomorrow's midday show with some of the more players in this whole discussion. All right, Paul Feinbaum on the way next. Y'all have a great one.